You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
Oh, I got a live one here.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another bonus episode of Two Peas. I'm very excited about this one. You got Gerald here with you, of course. And this episode, I got to tell you, man, this is like the dream guest to have on for this episode. I'm so excited to have this dude. I've been following his podcast. It's called Cadaver Cast. I've been following it for about a year now, to be honest. I heard about it through my friends over in Australia, Paul and Wayne. And it's a good show, man. He gets on there with his son. How old is Al now, Jeff?
He is seven.
7 years old. So he has a seven-year-old son and him, and they do a podcast about old monster movies and kind of, you know, the old Hammer horror films and that kind of thing. And, you know, my son's five going on six, and I don't know that they would keep his attention, Jeff, to be honest, but let me tell you. So this is Jeff from Cadaver Cast. I guess I should have led with that, but Jeff, how are you, man? Welcome to the show, brother.
I'm okay, man. It's absolutely freezing here today. It was a nightmare this morning, but...
Ooh, where are you?
Chicago.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Actually, I have a friend that said that she was going there this week, and she was like, yeah, it's going to be 8 degrees there.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why are you doing that to yourself?
It's -4 this morning with a wind chill of -26.
Wow, I'm glad you're inside recording. You're not outside recording this, are you? Please don't. Please don't.
No, I'm far underground.
So what we're doing today, you know, we do top five countdowns. That's our thing, right? So what we're doing today is we're doing our top five Tim Burton characters. Now, Jeff, let me tell all of our listeners, because this is a new thing for me. What I decided to do is we're going to do kind of like a director series, and we're going to just list the best characters from that director's catalog of films. This is the very, very first one we're recording, Jeff, so you get to do kind of the inaugural show for that.
I am honored.
But, you know, obviously, there's, especially in Tim Burton's quote-unquote universe, there's a lot of characters that aren't his, but that he was able to direct and that actors were able to kind of reinvent. So any of that is fair game. You know, some people are going to say, well, that character's been around for 100 years. That's not a Tim Burton character. But what I mean is they were in his movies. They were a spin on that character, whether it was brand new to a Tim Burton film or whether it was an existing character. You went that route too, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Otherwise, I would have had a pretty short list, I think.
We would have had to do like top two or something, yeah. But I love Tim Burton, man. So what about you, Jeff? I mean, because I've heard, you know, I've been listening to your show for a while, and I don't want to give anything away for our upcoming countdowns that we're going to be giving out here on the show, but I know you've covered at least a couple that would kind of pay homage to Tim Burton. Where does he fall for you as far as modern filmmakers are concerned?
It's definitely like a body of work that I grew up with, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it was hard to be a kid in the late 80s, early 90s and not see a whole bunch of Tim Burton all the time.
Right.
Right. So that, like, he's always been around, you know?
Yeah.
And I've tried to keep up with him as much as I can.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe last couple of years, I don't know, like the Alice in Wonderland sequel, I didn't even try, but...
Right,
you know,
right.
Like his early stuff, especially, is stuff I return to a lot.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you say that. How old are you, Jeff? If you don't mind me asking,
34.
Okay, so I'm 43, and you know, when Tim Burton was kind of rising to his kind, well, I guess really kind of the beginning of his career was, some people would argue, was the peak of his career, but you know, like in the early to mid 90s, and you know, I was in high school. I graduated high school in 94. And I was definitely like a grunge rocker, kind of goth kid, you know? So for Tim Burton to be as prominent as he was in those years for me, I just have never looked back. Like, I just latched on to that kind of, his style of filmmaking was so dark and kind of funny at the same time. And it was just enjoyable to me, man. I mean, I don't want to mention any characters that we're probably going to be talking about here in a little bit, but there's some movies, there are some movies and characters that I just watched and still do for just 20, 30 years that, you know, that I originally saw in his film. So I'm excited
to not like give away anything. I mean, his work was a huge inspiration to me and like where I am in my life. So
that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah. He's one of my top five filmmakers. So it was a no brainer to do this episode at some point with this new kind of wing that we're doing on directors, characters. And like I said, I'm so thrilled that you're here for the Tim Burton episode. I feel like that's going to fit perfectly.
With
what you do over there on Cadavercast. I've heard a couple episodes that I feel like might come up from Cadavercast. So, all right, I tell you what, man, let's get started. So we're going to count down our top five Tim Burton characters. Again, guys, these are any characters that showed up in a Tim Burton film, whether it was a character that was written by him or directed by him or possibly both. Do you want to go first, Jeff? How do you feel, man? You want to give us your number five?
Yeah, absolutely. Hold on. Before we do that, I think I should talk a little bit about my list.
Sure.
Because, you know, just the way I approached it
Was
sort of very heart forward, you know? So, like, there's very little objective approach to this. It was like, where is my heart in the work of Tim Burton?
And I'm glad you said that, because I do that on, and I mentioned that a few times on past episodes. I do that on every episode. I'm not trying to list the, quote, best, you know, or the most well-known or what have you. So I did the same thing, man. I mean, these are just my five favorites when I was looking through all the characters.
Yeah, so my number five is The Inventor from Edward Scissorhands, 1990.
Absolutely.
Played by Vincent Price, of course, and it was Price's last performance in a feature film. And, you know, I feel like people would probably lean more towards Edward Scissorhands as, like, the character. I also limited myself to one character per movie, think.
I tried to. We'll talk about that in a minute, but
I think I did.
I tried. But go ahead.
But for me, The Inventor is the heart of that movie.
Sure.
You know? When I think back on seeing Edward Scissorhands as a kid, like, those scenes were really upsetting to me in a way. And looking back on it as an adult, you know, it's like a story about how, you know, when we're young, there are these people in our lives who we have this opportunity to take so much from, who could give us everything if we just weren't young and stupid and just destroying things, you know? And that's Edward Scissorhands at that point. That's Edward, you know? He has this opportunity to get these hands, but it's something that he destroys, you know? There's the world in front of him, but he's too young and naive to be able to take it.
And what I loved about Edward too, just the movie, is, and really kind of Vincent Price's character there, is it was an interesting spin on the Frankenstein story, right? Because it was like a, I mean, I don't want to say monster, but it was like a unknown creature that was being created. And it was like, what if that creature was very timid and shy and lovely, you know? And it was a very interesting approach to it. So it was a feel-good version of that type of story, which I remember I thought was so inventive and I just loved it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, also being Vincent Price, who's, you know, one of my two favorite actors of all time.
Sure.
And it's just it's a powerful thing to watch, like from an adult perspective now. I didn't appreciate as a kid how important that role was, in the same way, I guess, that Edward didn't appreciate what, you know, he had.
Right.
So,
well, we're going to talk about Edward Scissorhands a little bit later from a different angle, but it's definitely one of my faves, man. It's such a heartfelt film, like you said. You know, Vincent Price, just as a person, as an actor, you can see Tim Burton casting him in that, you know, and I don't want to mention any other callbacks to Vincent that might come up later, but obviously that was a huge influence on Burton. And you could just tell that he's just a fanboy of that genre, you know what I mean? And he's able to recreate it on screen and tell it from a different angle, which I thought was really cool. But I love that pick, man. It's on my honorable mentions. I've been doing this thing, Jeff. I don't know if you've listened in the last month or so, but I just started doing this thing because I had so many honorable mentions, you know. So at the end of every episode, me and my guests are just like listing like 50, you know, things or whatever. So I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to round out my top 10. So on my honorable mentions, I just list my five that would have rounded out my top 10. So he would have been my number 8. So,
gotcha.
You know, great character. And Vincent Price is an absolute gem and just an historical marvel in this genre. So I definitely love the pick, man. All right. I tell you what, Jeff. So, you know, I don't know, man. I know you're doing the old monster movie thing over there with you and Al. And I know that you're a throwback guy, man. When I put up... when I put up suggestions on Twitter, you're always hitting me up with like the rare gems from like the 50s, which I love, but I have to Google it. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? So I don't know if, you know, how you're going to feel about a couple of my picks, but I am a, how can I put this? I'm a comic book nerd. I'm a superhero nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as that's concerned, you know, the universe of Batman is my number one. Spider-Man is a close number two for me. But especially if we're talking DC, Batman is the ultimate. So for my number five, I'm going to go with a villain that towed the line from not only being a villain, but also being a little bit of a heroine and a little bit of a, just a mysterious figure. I'm going to go with Michelle Pfeiffer's portrayal of Catwoman from Batman Returns in 1992.
I just love a big, strong man who's not afraid to show it with someone half his size. Be gentle, it's my first time. Thanks. You make it so easy, don't you? Always waiting for some bad man to save you. I am Catwoman. Hear me roar.
Awesome. Yeah.
That's my number five. You know, not to get too creepy on the episode, but it also did things to me as a young boy in 1992. I want to say I was maybe 16 or so. When she portrayed that. And, you know, I was rushing to the theater to see this as soon as it came out. I mean, I love Batman. I love the first one. Just everything Batman, but it's particularly Tim Burton's kind of inception of that character. But, I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer, in my opinion, is the best iteration of Catwoman that we've seen, particularly on the big screen. And I know there's not a lot to pull from there. You know, Anne Hathaway was okay a few years ago. I like her as an actress, but it wasn't Catwoman to me. It just kind of missed the folklore piece. What do you think, man? I mean, what's your take on... Are you going to be talking about this later? Because I don't want to...
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm also a big comic book nerd fanboy. I actually wrote my master's thesis on TV movies adapted from Marvel comic books.
Wow.
So I go way esoteric and weird.
I would like to read that, to be honest with you.
It's online, actually.
I'll check it out, man.
I can shoot the link over to you because it's...
Sure, yeah.
DePaul logs all that online, but it's like really deep, like communication theory and stuff like that.
Sure.
So, and I've also taught Marvel movie classes as well.
Wow. But, that's a lot of fun, especially these days.
Yeah. So I'm totally with you. She's my favorite Catwoman. The Batman Returns is my personal favorite Batman movie.
I love
of all
it,
Batman movies, like including the Nolan. I think it's my favorite.
I love it. It would be my number two behind The Dark Knight. I just, The Dark Knight was just an epic. Like I was just, it fucking blew my mind when I saw it. And it stuck with me for over 10 years now. And a lot of that probably has to do with Heath Ledger. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Batman Returns was just so grandiose. And it was so Burton-esque. But at the same time, it was so comic book. And, you know, he was able to blur that. You know, he was able to make like a gothic comic book adaptation. And he really did that in 89, too. But I feel like Batman Returns, he really just kind of, it was so fantastical. You know what I mean? And Catwoman, yeah. And Selina Kyle in general, as the timid Selina Kyle secretary role that she also played in that movie was awesome. And the way he did her turn, which was so mystical and so mythical with the cats and her falling off the building. And just when that light switched and she just turned into Catwoman, the rest of the film, the other two thirds of the film where she was Catwoman, she just embodied that character so empowering, so sexy. And it was just awesome, man. I love the end of that movie. And I remember to this day, I'm still heartbroken that we haven't seen the continuation of that.
Yeah.
And I doubt we ever will. But what a cliffhanger, man. And just to know that she's still there and she's still roaming the streets. And you know, we're going to talk a little bit about something later as well, but I love Catwoman from Batman Returns, man. So
okay.
that's my number five.
Awesome.
All right, man. So you're up. What's your number four, brother?
My number four is Pee-wee Herman. Pee-wee's Big Adventure 1985. Man, you know, when all the stuff happened with him.
right.
And he fell out of the limelight. I remember, you know, the big blowback from that when I was a kid of like, all of the parents being like, oh, you can't let your kids watch Pee Wee Herman movies or whatever, because he once masturbated in a movie theater.
Right.
You know.
Unfortunate. We all jerk off, though, you know. So it's, I mean, like, you know, we don't all get caught in a movie theater necessarily. But
I mean, to be a celebrity and to be in like, you know, an adult movie theater doing that, maybe not the best move. But, you know, I have hell sitting right in front of me, the entire collection of Pee Wee Herman, you know, the Pee Wee's Playhouse and everything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was a huge part of my childhood. You know, I had the doll, I had the Pee Wee Herman doll. But, I mean, in this movie, you get like the best Pee Wee.
Right, know? Right.
And also, and the great, tons of great moments with, you know, Large Marge and, you know, him dancing on the bar and stuff. It's iconic.
I agree, man. Speaking of Pee Wee Herman, portrayed by Paul Reubens, of course, was the father in of Penguin, right? In mm-hmm. Batman Returns, yeah. So
and in Gotham.
That's
well.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't see that, but I did read about that.
Oh, it's so good. They have a great storyline where Penguin goes to, like, stay with his father for a little bit. And it's just, it's wonderful. It's like 3 or 4 episodes. And just to have him back in that role was so exciting.
That's awesome, man. I had read that they were doing that, but I haven't caught it yet. Well, that's a good pick, man. Pee Wee Herman, obviously iconic, and I also regret the whole, you know, controversy around what happened to him there. But, you know, whether you, if you just take that out of your mind and you just look at the body of work, just the movie, iconic. I agree with you, man.
And in today's climate, like, look at what other people are doing, you know?
Yeah, sure. Like, yeah.
If he did that today, it would be like, well.
Yeah, no big deal. Know? Yeah. Exactly. All right, man. So my number 4 is what we're up to here. So my number 4 really carries an historical kind of thing for me. I really latch onto it for the history of the character and the performance itself. Now, I don't know if you listened a few weeks ago. We did our top 5 biopics. And I also named this movie one of my favorite biopics of all time. I feel like it was my number 3 or my number 4 biopic. But the movie is Ed Wood, and it's Martin Landau's portrayal of Bela Lugosi.
It's a master performance. Holy cow.
Absolutely, man. It came out in 1994, the film did. And just, I mean, like you said, I mean, just Landau's performance. Obviously, he won the Academy Award for that. Was noted for many other awards for that role as well. Obviously, the role of his career, not to take anything away from his career, but that was the performance of his career, in my opinion. And Bela Lugosi is just an awesome, just kind of in the history of cinema, is just so entrancing and so interesting and tragic at the same time. And, you know, Martin Landau makes you feel for that, man. He makes you believe that and makes you sympathize with that character so well in that movie. I know there's been some refuting for the accuracy from Bela Lugosi's family. And, you know, there was a little bit of controversy around that in the 90s. But, you know, whatever may have been spot on or not, I mean, Martin Landau's performance of that character made you believe what Bela Lugosi was going through. It was a beautiful story of friendship between him and Ed Wood, who could also be considered a bit of a tragic figure. You know, he died before he was able to really see any recognition for his work. And then when he did, it was that he was the worst director of all time. You know, I was going to ask you about you and Al, because unless I missed it, I don't think, are you guys going to do Plan 9 from Outer Space, you ever think?
We should at some point.
You should,
I think I mentioned it on the show. I used Plan 9 to teach him how to sneeze properly when he was really young.
That's awesome. I'm curious to see through the mind of a young kid like that what he would think if that movie's horrible or if, like, he was entertained. You know what I mean?
It'd be interesting. I mean, he loves it. I could tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't see it till much later. You know, I didn't see it until probably 10 or 15 years ago. So, but yeah, man, I just love, I mean, Bela Lugosi, yes, from a historical standpoint. And like I said, I love that movie as a biopic in general. But Martin Landau's performance is what does it for me. And it's, I don't know, man. Now that I'm looking at my 10 characters I have here, I would venture to say that may be the best acted performance in any Tim Burton movie.
I would agree with that. It is on my honorable mentions.
Okay.
So
I'm surprised it didn't make your list. I know that you guys did Dracula early on in your show, right?
Yeah. Dracula was our first full episode.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Yeah. So, I remember that back in the day. I knew it was early on.
Yeah, he's Al's favorite actor. So
that's awesome, man. That is so cool. Well, I pitched Bella as a name for my son, you know, because my wife's pregnant right now. She's doing it in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Oh, congrats.
Didn't go for it.
I knew that, though. You talked about that on the the superhero episode, too.
Yeah. I can tell you the name off air, but I'm not supposed to announce the names of the world. So I told my wife, I'm like, we have 15 listeners. Nobody's going to tell anybody, you know.
It's Criswell.
But anyway, yeah, Criswell. Bunny. But I pitched Bella, and she's like, no. And I'm like, well, it's not the girl, you know, it's Bela Lugosi. And she's like, no. So she didn't go for it. She's not a horror person, needless to say. But anyway, Bela Lugosi, portrayed by Martin Landau, is my number 4, which takes us around to you, man, for your number 3. What do you got?
My number 3 is Beetlejuice from Beetlejuice, obviously, 1988.
Sure, I can help. Do you You gotta help me.
What?
Look, how much am I calling the illegal alien, okay? I want out for good. In order for me to do that, hey, I gotta get married. Hey, these aren't my rules. Come to think of it, I don't have any rules. Come on. Look, you think of it as a marriage of inconvenience, okay? We both get something, I get out. You get to say you're Hitch's most eligible bachelor since Valentino came over. We're even, babe.
Okay, just help them.
Sure.
Beetlejuice.
It's showtime.
Initially, one of my, like, I had a couple knee-jerk reactions. My first thought when you came to me with this was like, oh, well, Beetlejuice is going to be number one.
Sure.
Right? Like, yeah. That was my very first thought. But then I was like, oh, but there's that whole thing where he tries to marry a young girl, and that's really gross. Like, as a kid, I would have said Beetlejuice. Hands down.
Right.
You know, because it makes me laugh. He's kind of, I mean, he's really, really gross. And I think from a modern perspective, when I watch it with Al, I'm like, you know, he'll be, if I feel like I've got to go, yeah, okay, but like, that's kind of really gross. That's
weird, don't do that, creepy,
and wrong.
Right.
You know, but his monologue about, you know, his qualifications, you know, I've seen The Exorcist about 167 times, you know, that whole thing.
Right.
Man, Michael Keaton in that role just nails every moment, steals the whole movie. I mean, the movie's called Beetlejuice, and he's not in the movie all that much.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, obviously, Burton has a knack for sticking with actors and working with them many, many times over. And we're actually doing this episode. It's going to kind of be released in conjunction with Dumbo. Tim Burton's doing Disney's Dumbo, kind of a live action version of that. And Michael Keaton's going to be in that, which I'm sure you saw.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is Danny DeVito, who obviously was in Batman Returns. And, you know, he loves to work with Johnny Depp, who was in Ed Wood. So, you know, it's cool. Michael Keaton really just, I mean, created an iconic vision in Beetlejuice. So many years later, man, I mean, it's just like you just, Halloween? How many Beetlejuices do you see on Halloween? It's been, what, 30 years since that movie came out?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's crazy.
People are still like, when are we going to get a number two?
Yeah,
you know, and actually they announced talks it. About it.
Yeah, they announced it. I want to say 2020 is what I most recently read, but I'm excited for that, man, to see him reprise that role for sure. But that's a good one, man. That's all my honorables. So we, you know what? Let me look back here, Jeff. I don't think we haven't had any crossover yet.
No.
That's interesting to me. But yeah, that's all my honorable mentions, man. Beetlejuice would have been right around my number seven. Just iconic, man. I mean, just one of those characters that did originally show up in a Tim Burton work, and you just will never forget it once you see the movie, you know?
Yeah. He had his own cartoon show, action figures,
yeah.
You know?
Absolutely, man. So good pick there, brother. Beetlejuice is your number three. Would have fell on my honorable mentions. So my number three, my top three I really struggle with, I got to be honest. It, literally any one of them could be number one. They're all 1A, 1B, 1C.
Yeah, same here.
It's ridiculous. But I'm going to say it before I change my mind again, because I literally was like shifting these three around for the last 24 hours. So I tell you what, man, my number three is the only, I guess I'll say character, but the only movie on my list that was not directed by Tim Burton. However, this is a story and characters that he created early, early in his career. But Jack Skellington, the Pumpkin King from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
Is my number three.
I left it off because I went purely directed.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to do that too, but I just couldn't. Jack Skellington, man. Like I said, this could easily be my number one, man. I was such a, we already talked about my high school years and kind of the goth alternative phase that I was going through when this came out as well, which was in 93. It's just so, I mean, we're talking about Beetlejuice a second ago. You can't walk into a novelty store and not find something Nightmare Before Christmas today.
Yeah.
I mean, especially like around the holiday season or Halloween season. It's just everywhere, man. I mean, it's just a phenomenon that just took off. And, you know, the stop animation is obviously so revolutionary to begin with. And this was directed by Henry Selick, who also did Coraline, which was another awesome stop animation kind of, I don't know, kids horror, if that's kind of a genre, you know, family horror. But Jack Skellington, I mean, is the, you know, it's voiced by Chris Sarandon here, who I also love, and it's sung by Danny Elfman when he's singing. Danny Elfman, obviously, is an amazing composer of many, many Tim Burton scores. This soundtrack is, like, to die for, dude. I mean, cover to cover, absolutely love it. Every song on there is just an awesome story. I haven't gotten to see this story on the stage, but I feel like this would play really well as a musical. But yeah, Jack Skellington, man. I mean, the Pumpkin King. I like what you said there because I really, really struggled with... This is the only character, but I really struggled with putting this on the list because it wasn't directed by Burton. But as I, you know, I knew a little bit about it, and as I'm reading more about it, I'm like, yeah, but this is his character, man. I mean, he created this character.
Yeah, you got to go with your heart.
And
you know?
There's a little cameo of Jack Skellington in Tim Burton's first published work, kind of in the background. Yeah. And it's just been around there in his kind of twisted imagination forever. And it played out in Nightmare Before Christmas. And this is an awesome movie, too, because you can watch it at Halloween time, you can watch it at Christmas time, you can watch it with your whole family. It's a little creepy. It's a little feel-good. Like I already said, the music's amazing. So this is one of my favorite films of all time, but it's definitely one of my favorite animated films of all time, and I had to put Jack Skellington on the list, man. He's my number three.
Yeah, we always save that for Christmas time, though, because I'm such a horror junkie that I need as much horror at Christmas as I can get, and, you know, there's not a ton of it, so I save that.
We watch it basically twice a year, every year. We do October, and then we'll do it again in December. So, and that's what's awesome about it is it really carries over for the whole season, you know, which is great. But yeah, man, I had to do it. But I do respect what you did there because, like I said, I was torn whether to put this on my list or not.
Yeah, I also felt if I went with Nightmare Before Christmas, I would be really tempted to put the guy on the list who has the axe in his head because every time I see a rabbit... Like, including yesterday. This happened yesterday. I was walking down the street and there was a rabbit. And I went, bunny.
Nice.
Every time I see a rabbit.
I'm going to start doing that now. I haven't done that. I'm going to start doing that now. That's awesome. There's a lot of, I mean, you mentioned that in jest, but I mean, there's so many cool characters that are just like background characters. They would be like, you know, if it was a regular movie, like a, you know, live action movie, they would be like extras, you know?
Yeah.
But they're so memorable. You know, you remember them all and you know, my son, your son may have gone through this too, but my son is like a freak for the little blind boxes, you know, blind bags and all that. And the Nightmare Before Christmas ones are really cool. They usually come out around October every year, obviously. And he'll get them and there'll be characters. I'll be like, oh, yeah, shit, I forgot about that guy. You know, but as soon as you see him, you're like, oh, yeah, he's the Nightmare Before Christmas. So it's funny that you mentioned that. But anyway, I'm sorry I'm rambling on there about Nightmare, but I love that movie, man. And I had to include The Pumpkin King as my number three.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We did an episode about it 2 years ago.
I remember that. I listened to it. I feel like it's been a while since I listened to it, but I like that one. That was good.
Yeah.
I'll wait till we get done, but I'm interested to see what you think Al would... Because Tim Burton's a good universe for him to explore for y'all's show.
Yeah.
I mean, really. You know, and a lot of them
I should have had
are,
him whip up a list, and then I could have just, like, read it off. I didn't even think about it.
I know.
I could always have him, like, record it, and I could just send it to you or something.
Yeah, please do, man. I'll put it on at the end of the episode or something. But at a minimum, have him email it to me, because I'm super interested.
Yeah.
All right, man. So we're up to our runner-ups. What do you got, man? What's your number two?
All right, my number two was my second knee-jerk reaction for number one, which I was like, oh, well, clearly, if it's not Beetlejuice, it's got to be Bruce Wayne / Batman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you about this guy I know, Jack. Mean kid, bad seed, hurt people. I like him already. Now, you know, the problem was he got sloppy, you know, crazy.
He started to lose it.
He had a head full of bad wiring, I guess. Couldn't keep it straight up here. He was the kind of guy who couldn't hear the train till it was 2 feet from him. You know what happened to this guy, Jack?
What?
Made mistakes. And he had his
lights out. Now you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
Well, that was when the comic book nerd came out. When I was like, no, not Beetlejuice. Got to be Bruce Wayne or Batman. But it ended up at my number two. And I originally just had Batman written on my list, but then I was thinking back to the superheroes episode you guys did. And I really do think that it's Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne more so than his Batman that sticks out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel his Batman is just Bruce Wayne with a mask on. You know, right. I mean, there's very right. little difference.
Right, which I tend to like, to be honest. But yeah, that has been a little bit of criticism over the years. And my buddy that I had on that episode, you know, really kind of opened my eyes to that as well, because I never saw that because I never had a problem with it. But
yeah, I don't either. Yeah. I like the idea of Bruce Wayne and Batman being so, like, unified as a person that he can't, like, stop being Batman.
Right.
You know, that in his personal life, he doesn't care about whatever, how many cases of champagne they open. He doesn't care because he's focused on other things, you know?
Right.
So when he has that moment in Batman Returns when he's dancing with Selina and they realize, you know, she realizes he's Batman, he realizes that she's Catwoman, you know, that, I mean, that's just his personal life, you know, like both sides of his personal life coming together.
Right.
And there's that confusion even for him as to, you know, which one he is.
Right.
You know,
he's literally like a kind of a split personality.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the best way that I kind of think of it. Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, and spoiler alert, this is my number two as well.
Hey, and, crossover.
And so, yeah, well, finally we had a crossover, right? So I'll go ahead and talk about it too, and we can just kind of chat about Michael Keaton here. I mean, Michael Keaton is my Batman. Would you say that as well, if you had to label?
Yes, 100%.
Portrayed that character. Yeah. I mean, when 89's Batman came out, bro, I was, I want to say 13 or 14. I was a young teenager, probably going through puberty. And, you know, and I said this, actually, you mentioned the superhero episode. I feel like I said this on there, but in the 80s and 90s, you didn't get superhero movies. I mean, you got them every 2, 3, 5 years, you know? And when Batman 89 came out, now I'm a fan of Christopher Reeve Superman, so I'm not talking shit about that franchise, but that was all we'd had at that point. And this movie comes out in 1989, and if you're a superhero fan, if you're a comic book fan, and not only that, you're a Batman fan, like I already told you I was, and you're in a theater looking at this on the big screen, I mean, there's nothing like it, man. I mean, it was literally like a life-changing experience for a moviegoer if you were a comic book fan. And because of that, Michael Keaton will always be my Batman because of the way it affected me at such a young age. Now, I've already mentioned that, you know, Dark Knight would probably be my number one movie that features Batman. But, I mean, Michael Keaton as the character, and like you said, as Bruce Wayne as well, it's just so kind of, I don't know, it's weird. It's almost like when the mask isn't on, he's kind of like absent-minded and just kind of like, you know, fumbling around. But as soon as he puts the mask on, he's so disciplined and organized.
He doesn't know how to be a person.
Right, right, know? Right, exactly, yeah. And like I said, it's almost like he has a split personality, you know, and Batman's his alter ego, which it is. And it is in the comics as well. So, I don't know, man. I remember thinking at the time, you know, at the time I'd probably seen like Mr. Mom or something. I mean, you know, I didn't really sure. like, you know, I didn't really know a lot about Michael Keaton in 89 and in the early 90s. But I remember thinking like, this is kind of a weird, like this supposed to be Batman. Like he's barely bigger than I am, you know, who is this guy? And then when you see it in 89, you're just like, okay, that's Batman. I mean, it's just like immediately, like within 5 minutes when he picks the guy up and he says, I'm Batman. Tell your friends about me.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me, man.
I'm not going to kill you. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
From that moment, you're like, all right, well, this is Batman. There's no escaping it. So,
and at the time, people were like really mad about his casting.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
you know, there are stories about how like people, you know, were just livid, like at conventions, just complaining. You know,
of course, yeah,
that he's going to be terrible. But in all fairness, people had the same reaction to Heath Ledger as the Joker in Advance, right?
They did, and definitely about Ben Affleck.
I actually, that's true. I actually lost some pseudo friends, I guess, over Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Really?
Back in the day. But this is a point of pride for me.
Uh-huh.
That I had seen The Brothers Grimm, right?
Okay.
That Heath Ledger was in. And at the end of Batman Begins, they tease the Joker.
Sure.
And I was at work. I worked at a grocery store. A bunch of comic book nerds, all, you know, all on cash registers.
Of course.
Had some downtime, and they were like, "Who do you think should play the Joker in this next one?" And I was like, "You know, I just saw this movie, Brothers Grimm. I think Heath Ledger should do it. I think he's fantastic." And they were like, "That's the worst casting ever. You want to cast 10 Things I Hate About You guy?"
I was going to say they probably mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I think he can handle it. Watch Brothers Grimm. I think he could do it. I think he's got it in him.
Wow. You got an eye for this, brother. I'm still so proud of that. Yeah.
Like, that's a point of pride for me forever. I'll never stop talking about
it. You should be, man. I think I may have mentioned it on that superhero episode, but I would put that performance by Ledger in probably my top 10 acting performances, at least in the last 20 years.
Yeah. There's a video by, it's on a YouTube channel called Film Joy.
Uh-huh.
And they do a video, it's like a half hour long, about why that is the best performance, like, in any film.
Wow. I'll have to check that out. I don't know that I would go that far, but maybe seeing that would convince me, because it probably wouldn't take much to twist my arm.
They may be, like, in the modern era. I don't remember the specific claim, but it's like,
yeah,
this is the greatest.
That's awesome, man. Well, we crossed over there on Batman / Bruce Wayne from Michael Keaton. Obviously, the 89 Batman, and then again in Batman Returns in 92. I mean, he's just my Batman, dude. It was really hard not to put it at number one, but I'll explain why in a moment. But we are up to our number ones. So if you're ready, man, I'm going to let you give it. I'm excited here, man. I don't know that I can guess it, to be honest.
Maybe not.
Because I would have said Beetlejuice or Batman, and I would have said another one that I feel like you told me was in your honorable mention. So I got to be honest, I have no idea. What's your number one, brother?
I had to go all heart here. I mean, it's just when I started thinking about it, I was like, for me as a human being, this movie is the most important thing that Tim Burton's ever done for me personally. And this character is the most important character for me from his entire work, which is his version of Ed Wood in Ed Wood.
Oh, I got you. Okay, awesome. I would not have guessed it. I would have thought Bela Lugosi ahead of Ed Wood based on that.
It's a better performance, but I tell you what, you know, I saw Ed Wood when I was in high school, mm-hmm. you know, and I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Sure.
You know, I was shooting things on like Hi-8 cameras, VHS-C, like really crappy formats, like making short films when I was in middle school and high school. And, you know, I always, like, my hero was Orson Welles, like, as a teenager. Like, I was like, oh, I want to be Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's a huge thing to set for yourself, like, as a goal to be Orson Welles.
I'll say, yeah.
And I saw Ed Wood at some point, probably, like, I don't know, sophomore, junior year of high school. I saw Ed Wood for the first time. And his hero, too, is Orson Welles. Mm-hmm. So I immediately connect with him. But the movie really, and like, again, no matter how much was changed by Tim Burton in bringing this character to the screen, I think what he did is romanticize Ed Wood as a human being in such a way that filmmakers like myself or aspiring filmmakers like myself could look at this movie and say, yeah, you know what? It doesn't matter if we aren't our heroes, so long as we're doing what we love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might be crap. We might be the only ones who love it, but like that urge life to is create, good, right? You know, is it's got to be satisfied. So even if you're hanging paper plates from strings and spray painting them, mm-hmm. like if that's all you can do, do it, right? And do it the best that you can do. And right. that for me, like, was, it's inspired me and it's kept me going, you know, for my entire career in, you know, film studies. And I also am a screenwriter, you know, and it's none of that's easy. It's all a struggle, but it's that impulse to create, that impulse to work in film mm-hmm. is just indelible. And I don't know, maybe without this movie, I would have given up. I don't know.
Did you know of Ed Wood before you saw the movie, or did he introduce you to that?
I want to say that I knew of Plan 9.
Okay.
I don't know that I had seen it. I mean, the reputation of Plan 9 since that whatever Golden Turkeys Award book came out in, what, the 80s
mm-hmm.
or whatever? Like, that I knew of, but...
Yeah, I only asked because I didn't. I knew of Bela Lugosi, obviously, but I didn't know of Ed Wood, and I definitely didn't know of Bella and Ed's friendship. So that movie in 94 when I saw it, you know, I was such a huge Tim Burton fan. I remember I saw this when it came out. And it was different. It was a very different Burton movie than anything that he had done. And I didn't appreciate it as much at the time because I didn't know who Ed Wood was going into it, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So yeah. I feel like if I'd had a quote unquote interest in him and had a base knowledge of him and the internet had been kind of active at the time, then I would have enjoyed it more. But over time, like I said, I named it one of my top five biopics. So over time, it's become one of my favorites. And you know what, man? I mean, I'm going to be talking about Johnny Depp here in a second, but we can go ahead and talk about Johnny Depp and Tim Burton's collaboration if you want to. But
sure.
I mean, do you think Ed Wood's the best Depp has done in one of his films? It's got to be, right?
It is up there. I mean, he's so good in Edward Scissorhands, so subtle mm-hmm. in that, that every time I watch that, I am really impressed by it. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, Johnny Depp, as a human being, has had some problems sure. lately sure. that definitely taint some of that in my mind.
Sure.
But, I mean, you look at him in these movies that he does with Tim Burton, and Tim Burton gives him this opportunity to get weird and wild, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that other people... I mean, that's what you hire him for now, but I feel like especially early on in his career, Johnny Depp wasn't getting to do Weird and Wild. He was in like whatever private resort, you know, in 85 or whatever the hell that was.
You know, this is going to sound strange, and of course, there would really be no way to know unless Depp told us himself. But I mean, I feel like kind of the way he carries himself now, and I'm talking about, and I'm not talking about the personal, you know, controversies he's had. I'm just talking about him as a person, his personality, his fashion sense, that kind of thing. Just like when you see him out and about in public, I almost wonder if his relationship with Burton over the last, you know, 25 years has kind of molded him into kind of the hipster dude that he is, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's kind of a strange hipster, and I wonder if he would be that way if he didn't have all these roles over the last 25 years.
No, it's a good question. I mean, you know, would there be like a Hot Topic if Tim Burton didn't exist? You know, right. Like, where did these things come from? Where did they start? You know?
Right. No, he's definitely brought happiness to a lot of people with that whole goth thing he's got going on. But I don't know, man. Well, I tell you what. All right. So Ed Wood, great pick, man. Love it. I mean, Bela Lugosi, just I knew about him when I saw that movie, and I almost thought of Ed Wood as kind of a Bela Lugosi biopic. I don't know. It was sure. weird at the time because I was really, you know, digging those old Universal picks. And, you know, I knew about him, obviously, in Karloff and, I mean, you know, The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Like, I loved all that shit. So I kind of knew about that going in. And then this Ed Wood guy was kind of introduced to me in the movie. So I grew to love it over time. And it's one of my favorites today. But I can see why you named it. Now, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, Johnny Depp is also my number one. And it's also an Ed, but it's Edward Scissorhands.
There you go.
So as you've already mentioned, or we've already mentioned a few times, came out in 1990. And this is one that I did not see in the theater. But my memories of this movie, well, there's several, but one of my biggest memories of this movie is my mom bought this for me on VHS tape for Christmas one year. It must have been the following year, so it was probably like 91. And I got to tell you, bro, like, you know how people say you wore the tape out? Me and my sister wore this tape out. I mean, we watched yeah. this movie literally every weekend for our entire teenage years. And I still love it, man. I have it on 4K. If it ever comes on TV, I got to stop and watch a little piece of it. I also try to watch this one around the holiday season. It's got a little kind of tangential Christmas vibe going on to it.
Yep.
Johnny Depp's performance. I mean, you talked about it already. I mean, so subtle, so timid, so out of place, which I thought was really, I've already talked about how it's kind of a spin on the Frankenstein story, in my opinion. But, you know, the Vincent Price cameo.
I know it's a little early for Christmas, Edward, but I have a present for you.
The dad in this film is hilarious and has some awesome one-liners. Winona Ryder is an absolute goddess. I mean, I absolutely love Winona Ryder. Another character that, or another actress, I should say, that often shows up in Tim Burton films.
Yep.
Whether it's voice or whether it's on screen, but I love her, man. This was an awesome love story, in my opinion. It was a gut-wrenching, tragic love story. And she's telling that story at the beginning of the film, and you get to kind of live through that quote-unquote romance with her. And Edward, you know, joins society, has to kind of learn to adapt to society, realizes that he can't, and returns to solitude. And that's a very deep kind of plot line that Tim Burton and Johnny Depp were able to make lighthearted. And it's a very deep, it's very heavy, man. I mean, it's a very heavy yeah. movie if you think of it from Edward's perspective, losing his creator, not being able to coexist with really anyone in the real world, and having to be there by himself with his shrubbery and whatever else he's doing up there. So it's a deep story, man, and it's, you don't think of it that way because of the way Burton was able to tell that story. And I think that's really
a tragedy, really
cool. Yeah, exactly.
At its heart, you know. And you got Anthony Michael Hall mm-hmm. as like the villain of the piece, you know.
Beefed up, man.
Oh man, he's jacked in that thing. Like, he goes from 16 candles where he weighs like 73 pounds you know, to just huge in this thing, you know, but it's like his, you know, like bigotry or whatever, you know, like forces Edward's scissor hands. Oh, that's a weird turn of phrase, but there you go.
There it is.
Forces him to like take action. And in the end, right, you've got Edward, who is basically a child existing in this world, but then suddenly he's got to become like practically an action hero in the end of the movie. And when he goes back into his home, like ready to kill, it's heartbreaking, but also like badass.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And you feel for him, and you feel for him really throughout the whole, you know, you connect with him immediately. And that, and he's such a foreign figure. You know, we don't know what he is. We don't know what he's going to be. He's a creature, right? You know, and he's different, which I think is a little bit of the social message that's in the movie as well. You know, we have to accept those that are different. It's kind of an overlying message, I feel like, in the film as well, especially in today's day and age, if you watch it.
Yep.
But anyway, man, I you know, this began the many, many, many years of collaboration between Burton and Depp as well. I want to say this was the first Burton movie that Depp showed up in.
I think so.
I think so, too. And with the exception of Ed Wood, it might be his best acting in a Burton film. They're probably tied for me. But
yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's the subtlety of his Edward Scissorhands that really makes that a special performance. His Ed Wood is sort of caricatured, you know. But I think Edward Scissorhands is really subdued, and there's a lot of minor things that he does facially and with his body. That, I mean, he's so, like in the Pirates movies, you know, he's so over the top and he's like wiggling around and, you know, doing all these strange movements. But he's very controlled in Edward Scissorhands in a way that we don't think of him nowadays.
I agree, man. You know, one of my favorite scenes in that movie, actually, probably my top three favorite scenes. Nothing happens, but it's so subtle because he comes back to the house. I can't remember the mom's name for whatever reason, but.
Diane Wiest.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And she brings him home, you know, and gets him all ready for bed and everything. And he lays down in the waterbed and just looks over at that little clown, stuffed animal that happens to be looking at him. It's kind of like, what are you looking at? You know, but it's just a plush toy. But I love that scene. It's only like 5 seconds long, and I crack up every time. And it's so subtle and stupid. And, you know, if you weren't paying attention, you'd miss it. But
yeah,
stuff like that. I agree with you that Depp really nailed it. All right, man. So I tell you what I want to do real quick, Jeff, is just give a wrap up. So what was your five again? Just give us the countdown real quick.
So my five were, The Inventor, Pee Wee Herman, Beetlejuice, Bruce Wayne Batman, and Ed Wood.
Good list, brother. I can't believe we only had crossover on one. That's impressive. I'm actually glad, because I thought we were going to go crossover nuts here. My top five were, number five was Catwoman. Four was Bela Lugosi. Number three was Jack Skellington. Two, Batman and Bruce Wayne. And number one was Edward Scissorhands. There you go. Also, if we were doing the top five worst porn parodies, Edward Penis Hands could probably be on my list, too.
There is that. Oh, boy. Have you ever seen pictures of what that thing looks like?
No. I don't know. I haven't. Should I? I shouldn't, right?
It's nasty looking. Yeah,
I'm not going to.
As a teenager, I was like, I have to see what it looks like. And so I Googled, like, just the image or whatever. And it was...
Oh, no.
It's disgusting. Like, I wouldn't want to see that anywhere near a person's naked body.
No going back. Disgusting. All right, man. So what we normally do is I'm going to shout out some people online here in a minute and see what you think of their picks. We had some good ones over on Facebook. I know.
Yeah. I saw some Twitter.
I don't think you and I are connected on Facebook yet, but we had some good ones over there on our fan page that I'm going to read out. But before we do that, did you want to give your honorable mentions, Jeff? Do you have any that didn't quite make the list that you want to shout out?
Yeah. Again, because of Vincent Price, Vincent Malloy from the short film Vincent that was like his earliest thing.
Sure.
That's fantastic. Lydia Deetz in Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. For me, like, along with a number of other characters as a kid, Lydia, Wednesday Adams, Elvira, right, defined my taste in women as a young man.
Sure.
So
Vampira.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Penguin, I think, in Batman Returns is one of the most disgusting things, like, ever on film.
Yeah.
And to go along, you know, opposite Catwoman, who's really graceful and beautiful and, you know, dangerous, and the Penguin's nasty.
Right, right.
Right. So I had trouble not putting him on the list, but obviously Batman had to make it. Obviously, Bela Lugosi, I said.
Mm-hmm.
I like Tim Burton's take on Sleepy Hollow. Like, he does some interesting stuff there.
I do too, man. The Headless Horseman by Christopher Walken would probably be like my 11 or 12. He was really good too. He doesn't say anything. The whole movie just grimaces and growls the whole time. But his face in that movie is amazing.
It made my short list of honorable mentions just because, like, we took a trip out to Sleepy Hollow recently. Oh, yeah. So, okay. You know, that it's kind of been on my mind.
Cool. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. You have another one? Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the Martians in Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
Love those guys.
Yeah, they got a shout out too. All right. So I just usually round out my top 10. Most of them have been mentioned. However, I'm shocked that our number 6 has not been mentioned yet. Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker in Batman 89. Powerhouse actor that really just took that character by the reins there. I really enjoyed his portrayal of the Joker in Batman 89. Beetlejuice, which we already mentioned. The Inventor from Edward Scissorhands, which we already mentioned. And then two that we have not mentioned yet. My number 9 would be the Oogie Boogie Man from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Really just for his song, to be honest. I love that song. But he's obviously just kind of an awesome villain in that film. And then Sweeney Todd, also portrayed by Johnny Depp. It would be my number 10. Love that musical and love that Burton decided to bring that to the big screen there. All right, Jeff. I tell you what, man. So I know you saw over on Twitter, you said. So I'll tell you what we'll do first. I'll tell you what we'll do first, man. We'll go over to Facebook. All right. So here's some suggestions that we got over on the Facebook fan page. Guys, if you have not joined up there yet, check on the show notes and join up. That's where we interact with our fans typically the most. Drew Hallam over on the Facebook fan page said the Penguin. He also said Beetlejuice, of course. Pee-wee, of course. But then he threw these two in there, which were interesting. Let's see what you think. He said the Mad Hatter and 9. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't even think of 9.
Did you show 9 to Al yet?
He has seen it, but he was really young, so he doesn't remember it, I guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Drew's a good buddy of mine. Hey, Drew. What's up?
Drew's awesome, man. And then, let's see. Pete from Podstalgic put Edward Scissorhands and Francis Buxton. There you go. Two ironclad ones there.
Yeah.
Amanda. I love Amanda. She's actually been on the show like 4 times in January. I love her. Constant collaborator of the show. She's got a few that have not been. Well, I think you mentioned Lydia from Beetlejuice, right, Jeff?
Yeah. Honorable mentions. Yeah.
Yeah. So she said Lydia. She also said Ed Bloom from Big Fish. What do you think of Big Fish? You a fan of that one?
Yeah. That was on sort of my list of ones that if I had time to revisit them, I wanted to. Because I liked Ed Bloom as a character a lot when I saw it, but I haven't seen it since it came out.
Mm-hmm. It's a good flick. And then she also put Sally from The Nightmare Before Christmas. Jack and Sally were in my honorable mentions. We just recently, it hasn't even aired yet, we just recently counted down cinematic romances. And Jack and Sally was like my 6 or 7. I think they're more of a duo as opposed to individuals, but I do love the Sally character from Nightmare. And then Justin, who's a good buddy of mine from the Epic Film Guys, I think you're familiar with him.
Yeah.
He's got Batman, 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 and number 5 is Batman. So
didn't see that coming.
I'm gonna say he's into Batman. And then his partner in crime, Nick over there, who's also an Epic Film Guy, said that that's a garbage list and that 1 through 50 should be Lieutenant Eckhart. And he's just got a gif of Eckhart up there. So that's good. Tony Dobbish. I love Tony Dobbish, man. He's got 2 from The Nightmare Before Christmas. He says Oogie Boogie and Jack Skellington. I love him, man. Both of those were in my top 10. Me and him have very similar tastes. We crossed over a lot on our on-screen duos episode too. I love Tony. And then the last couple I mentioned on Facebook, Wes, who's a good friend of the show from Via VHS, he said, this could have been number 1, but somebody had to have a giant spider, and he put up Nicolas Cage in the Superman costume. What do you think of that? Do you wish that had gotten made, or are you kind of glad that we dodged that bullet?
I do wish it had gotten made.
Really?
I mean,
really?
Like I said, I love the TV movies. I mean, I spent 2.5 years of my life writing about Marvel TV movies that most people would never watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen them dozens of times. So the weirder and more trashy the superhero movie, the more I tend to like it.
I
wish it had been made. But as a screenwriting instructor, it's a really useful story, that whole giant spider thing, mm-hmm. to talk about how sometimes, man, a producer comes in with an idea, it wants you to change your script,
right?
And it's just like the whole thing falls apart. Yeah, some movies just can't handle a giant spider.
Yeah, don't do it. Yeah. Wow. All right. And then the last one on Facebook. So Brian Loy, I love him. Loy Sauce, the god of podcasting. He listed his top 10, but we have mentioned almost all of them. So I'm going to mention the ones that he put on here that we did not mention. He's got Mrs. Nellie Lovett from Sweeney Todd and Large Marge from Pee Wee.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one. And just for shits and giggles, I'll let you know what his number one was Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas. And then over on Twitter, man, I know you saw some of these. Let's see. Gidget Von LaRue says, bingo, it has got to be Beetlejuice. You said you almost put that one number one, right, Jeff?
No, that was my first thought. Like, I was like, oh, it's got to be Beetlejuice. But then I was like, wait, he had Batman. And then once I started following my heart.
Right. I can see why. And Mike Marlowe, Mikey Geek over on Twitter, basically the aliens from Mars Attacks, which I believe you mentioned a few minutes ago. Varmint said, Martin Landau as Bela Lugosi is greater than every other character in a Tim Burton movie. Obviously, we don't quite agree with that, but wow, it was
Performance-wise,
no question. I feel like it's probably the best performance that Tim Burton's ever had the pleasure of directing, in my opinion. So that's it, man. Thank you so much for the feedback, guys. It means a lot when you get back to us over there on Twitter and Facebook. And Jeff, from Cadavercast, you've never been on the show. You're a first-timer. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm so thrilled that, you know, we were trying to get together in October because we were doing all of our horror-themed eps.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work out. But
no, it was chaos for me. I was teaching a new class. I was taking a class. I was writing a script. It was, oh, my God.
That's your time of year, man. You got to get the juices flowing, you know what I mean? Yep. But I'm so thrilled that you came on, man. It was a lot of fun, and your list was great. I tell you what, man, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you and Al online, brother? You got an awesome show over there. I listen frequently.
Oh, thanks.
And Al's a cutie, man. So tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can find Cadavercast, I guess, most places that podcasts show up. iTunes, where we post on SoundCloud. We're on Stitcher, things like that. If you find us not somewhere, tell me, and I'll try to get us there. But we're on Twitter at Cadaver_cast, and we're on Facebook and stuff. So Cadavercast, look us up. I'm really the sidekick of the show.
Right.
But, you know, with the host being seven, he can't traditionally go out and do guest spots on other shows because he's a kid. He's got school and homework and stuff, you know.
Right. Yeah. He can't do all the editing quite yet.
Yeah, that too.
He'll probably get there, though. But no, I love your show, man. It's a lot of fun. It's a great. I'm envious of it, to be honest, because my son, you know, he's getting there. He's about a year and a half younger than Al, I want to say, maybe 2 years younger. But he's getting there, man. He's still obviously in the Disney kind of phase or whatever, in the animation phase. But, you know, my wife gets worried about him seeing some, even like a trailer. You know, he'll see like a trailer for a horror movie or a PG-13 movie, and she'll be like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "What's on TV?" I mean, I didn't do it. You know? So yeah. We're kind of tiptoeing around it a little bit, but he's definitely got the interest because he knows how into horror I am. So I can't wait till he hits that maybe 10 or 12 mark, and I'm just going to go nuts and start showing him everything under the sun.
It's been a lot of dipping our toes into areas, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and listen to the beginning of the show, Al was four when we started. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was really Universal Monsters. It was tame stuff for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, he acclimated to things fast. I mean, my mom showed him Beetlejuice when he was, like, four. And I was like, I don't know, how'd he handle it? And she was like, oh, he's laughing his butt off.
Nice.
And so.
Yeah, I love that, man. That's always really cool when they kind of share your sensibilities without really trying. They just do, you know, because it's something you're into. Well, that's it, man. Jeff, I really appreciate you being here, brother. Make sure you guys check out Cadavercast. All the information for Jeff and Al will be in the show notes. And then so will ours if you want to subscribe and check us out in the future. Jeff, thanks, man. I appreciate you
being
here.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, brother. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. This has been another bonus episode of 2Ps. Talk to you soon.
Hi, Gerald. And hi, all listeners. I am Al. You can also find me on Cadavercast, and I will be reading my top 5 Tim Burton characters. Number 5, Edward Scissorhands. Number 4, Pee-wee Herman. Number 3, Adam from Beetlejuice. Number 2, Batman. Number 1, The Martians. And that's my top 5 Tim Burton characters. Bye. I'm the Boogie Boogie Man.
Release me now, or you must face the dire consequences. The children are expecting me, so please come to your senses.
Ah, you're joking! You're joking! I can't believe my ears! Would someone shut this fella up? I'm drowning in my tears! It's funny! I'm laughing! You really are too much. And now, with your permission, I'm going to do my stuff.
Well, what are you going to do?
I'm going to do the best I can.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.